Today in Atlanta, the granddaughter of Booker T. Washington unveiled a marker at the site of a speech her grandfather gave 100 years ago. On September 18, 1895, leaders of the South gathered in Atlanta to present a vision for a new South. Booker T. Washington spoke to the gathering, and what he said then remains controversial even today. Commentator Gerald Early has these thoughts about why.
African-American historian Rayford Logan called Booker T. Washington's Atlanta Exposition speech one of the most effective pieces of political oratory in the history of the United States. This speech was meant to acknowledge the participation of blacks in an exposition that celebrated the new industrialized South. Unfortunately, this new South had not abandoned the old South's treatment of African-Americans. It added to its practice of beatings, burnings, and lynchings less bloody forms of intimidation, such as disenfranchisement through literacy tests and grandfather clauses, convict leasing and peonage, and an elaborate and well-enforced system of segregation, so well-enforced that blacks in the South, just as they had been during slavery, were one of the most policed groups in the United States. And in this way, the New South had, once the North stopped interfering with something called Reconstruction, solved its race problem. As proof of this solution, the New South, in 1895, unveiled the new Negro leader, Booker T. Washington. Washington was an extraordinary man, probably one of the most astute politicians of his day, often a shrewd and capable broker for African-American interests. His rise from the salt mines of West Virginia to a degree from Hampton Institute to, in 1881, the founding of Tuskegee Institute is a great American story. In an era when blacks had virtually no power or influence in American public life, he amassed a great deal of influence by advocating vocational education for blacks and acceptance of the political status quo. He acted very much like a political boss, dispensing favors, demanding loyalty, backed by a powerful machine. He tried to control black public opinion by buying black newspapers that were critical of him. He tried as well to buy black intellectuals who were critical of him. He did his best to negate or destroy the influence of his enemies. In this regard, he was very much like the great industrialists and financiers of the day, Morgan, Rockefeller, and Carnegie, all men Washington greatly admired. In 1895, when Washington gave his speech, he was the head of the all-black secular Tuskegee Institute that had become a major force in black American education. But his great moment of ascendancy is remembered as, at best, a poorly struck compromise. "In all things that are purely social," Washington said to his racially mixed audience, "we can be as separate as the fingers, yet one as the hand in all things essential to mutual progress." This was seen by many blacks as an absolute capitulation to segregation and second-class citizenship. Moreover, some blacks were disturbed that Washington seemed to take the white Southern view that Reconstruction was a nightmare and blacks were unfit to participate in government. Contrary to what some Afrocentrics think today, despite Washington's support of black business and the creation of black institutions, he was not a black nationalist. He believed in assimilation and standard American ideals. Contrary to what some black conservatives think today, Washington's solutions for blacks were a mixture of anti-intellectualism and a stodgy conservatism that reflected the unenlightened views of Northern white philanthropists and Southern Bourbons. But this is not to deny Washington's considerable achievements as educator, power broker, as institution builder. In Ralph Ellison's novel, Invisible Man, Washington's complexity is captured in two characters, the heroic founder and the devious Bledsoe. He was truly, like his nickname, one of the great American wizards.
Gerald Early teaches literature and directs the African and Afro-American Studies Department at Washington University. He's the author of The Culture of Bruising.